Welcome to the deep dive. Here is a statistic that honestly, it should completely change how you look at the stock market.
Oh, absolutely. It's wild.
Right. So over the last decade, up to 70% of companies globally have actually destroyed value,
Yeah, 70%.
which is just, I mean, they're growing, right? They're
Yeah.
making splashy headlines. They're talking about, disrupting industries, but behind the scenes, they're just quietly bleeding cash.
Yep, just burning through it.
So today, we're going to give you, the listener, the X-ray vision to spot them. We're going to learn how to cut through the noise of Wall Street and really look at the actual skeleton of a business.
Exactly, to see if it's truly creating wealth for you or just, silently burning your money.
And to get this X-ray vision, our insights today are coming from this phenomenal, highly detailed essay, and an accompanying slide deck from a source called Averaging Up.
It's a great piece.
It really is. It lays out this masterclass in what we call quality investing, focusing heavily on an investment framework for financial statement analysis and cash flow analysis.
Right.
But before we start pulling apart the mechanics of these businesses, I do need to explicitly state right off the top, this deep dive is entirely educational.
Right. Very important.
Yeah, we are here to analyze an analytical framework. But this does not constitute investment advice. We aren't here to tell you what to do with your brokerage account.
No, not at all. We're building a mental model today. The goal is to elevate how you evaluate businesses so you can make those informed decisions yourself.
Okay, let's unpack this. The Averaging Up essay, it kicks off with a quote from the legendary financial strategist Michael Mauboussin, and it really sets the stage for, well, everything.
It's a perfect starting point.
He states that a company's anticipated value creation is measured by how much its return on invested capital, which is often called ROIC, exceeds its cost of capital, and importantly, how long it can maintain that positive spread. But before we go any further, let's translate that out of finance jargon.
Let's do it.
What exactly is this cost of capital? Mauboussin makes it sound like a simple formula, but how do we actually visualize this, invisible movement of money inside a company?
Right, so let's look at it like this. Imagine you want to start a business, but you need money to do it. So you go to a bank and you take out a loan.
Okay.
And they charge you, let's say, a 5% interest rate. That 5% is your cost of capital. It's the fundamental hurdle you have to jump over just to break even on the money you borrowed.
Right, just to tread water.
Exactly. So if your business, your return on invested capital, or ROIC, makes a 10% return using that money, you have successfully cleared the hurdle.
You've created value.
Yes, that positive spread between the 5% cost and the 10% return is, I mean, it's the absolute core of capitalism.
That makes perfect sense. But on the flip side, if I borrow at that same 5% and the business project I invest in only yields like a 3% return, I am actively losing money.
You are.
I am destroying value, even if my overall revenue numbers are going up every single year.
And that gets right to the heart of why that 70% statistic you mentioned earlier actually exists. So to visualize how this happens inside a living, breathing company, the Averaging Up essay introduces this really foundational concept.
Which I love.
Yeah, the author argues that every business, if you strip away the products and the marketing, is essentially just a flow of capital between two distinct reservoirs.
So we're picturing like a plumbing system here, two giant water tanks connected by pipes.
Right. Let's call them Reservoir A and Reservoir B.
Okay.
Reservoir A is, well, they call it the toll. This is the tank collecting cash right now, today, because the business sits at some structural choke point in the market.
So it's short duration.
Exactly. It's happening now. Reservoir B, on the other hand, is the growth. This is the cash required for tomorrow. It's the long-duration investments that the company hopes will eventually make tomorrow's toll much larger.
Okay, let's ground this in a real-world example, but I want to keep your plumbing metaphor going.
Go for it.
Think of it like owning a highly successful local coffee shop. Reservoir A is the cash from the daily lattes you sell, right? The toll.
Right.
You have a line out the door, the espresso machine is just humming, and cash is pouring in today.
And then you have Reservoir B.
Yes, Reservoir B is this massive pile of cash you need to spend to, open three new locations across town. That's the growth.
Beautiful.
You're taking the liquid cash from today's toll, piping it over to Reservoir B to fund the hope of even more cash tomorrow.
What's fascinating here is that almost every business has both of these reservoirs. They have a toll they collect today and growth they are funding for tomorrow.
Right.
So the ultimate test of quality investing, the X-ray vision we're talking about, is observing the direction of the water flow between them.
The direction of the flow?
Yes. Does reservoir A pump so much cash that it completely fills up reservoir B and then overflows into the owner's pockets?
Mm.
Or is reservoir B just this giant leaky drain that is violently sucking your current coffee shop dry?
Wow. Okay, so if the direction of that capital flow dictates the literal life or death of a business, there must be different outcomes depending on which way the water is flowing.
Absolutely. The source material maps this out as the spectrum of absorption, and it details three really distinct zones where any business can land.
Okay, what are they?
So zone one is what they call overflow. This is the ideal state.
The holy grail.
Exactly. In zone one, the toll absorbs the growth. It generates far more cash than the growth tank can even consume.
Meaning the original coffee shop is making so much money on lattes that it easily pays for the new locations and still has a massive puddle of cash spilling over the top.
Yes, and that surplus overflows back to the owners. This is value creation. But then as we slide down the spectrum, we hit zone two, which is called erosion.
Erosion, okay.
In zone two, you still have a profitable toll. Your main coffee shop is still doing great. But that surplus cash is being wasted on value-destroying growth.
Oh, I see.
The business survives, but the capital allocation is poor because the growth returns less than it costs.
So they're building new coffee shops in neighborhoods that don't even drink coffee. The new locations return less money than it costs to build them.
Right.
But wait, why would any sane CEO do this? If the math clearly shows that the new growth is destroying value, why not just stay in zone one and collect the overflow?
Well, because of human behavior and, frankly, corporate incentives, CEOs are very frequently compensated based on the sheer size of the empire, not how efficiently it runs.
Of course.
It's much more glamorous to ring the bell on Wall Street and announce you are doubling your global footprint, even if the underlying economics are terrible.
So they'd rather run a massive, unprofitable empire than a small, highly profitable one.
Right. So they keep forcing that value-destroying growth, slowly eroding the company's worth.
That is fascinating and honestly, slightly terrifying.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the final zone. Zone three, depletion.
Right. In zone three, the worst-case scenario, the growth completely devours the toll. There is no overflow. The business is just draining its capital towards zero.
It's literally just consuming itself.
Exactly. Constantly having to reach out to banks or investors for more cash just to keep the lights on.
You know, if you look at the business headlines right now, you see this constantly. These high-growth tech startups or direct-to-consumer brands that are just celebrated for doubling their revenue every single year.
Oh, all the time.
But when you apply this reservoir framework, you realize they are sitting squarely in zone three. They are secretly just endlessly devouring capital.
Yep. They don't have a functional toll. They just have an incredibly expensive wave of growth that is draining them dry.
So what does this all mean for us? I mean, if this flow dictates the life or death of a business, where are the fingerprints hidden so we can measure it ourselves?
Well, the good news is this is an abstract theory. The direction of absorption leaves literal fingerprints on the financial statements.
Okay, good.
The essay lays out four specific dials to read. Let's start with dial one, free cash flow as a share of revenue.
Okay, so the overflow.
Exactly. This is the most direct reading. What is left of the toll after growth is funded.
Right, and the source actually gives a fantastic benchmark for this. They say that converting 25 to 30 cents of every revenue dollar into free cash flow is the mark of a toll overflowing its growth.
That's right.
So if a business is growing its revenue to billions of dollars, but producing only 2 or 3 cents of free cash flow on the dollar, the plumbing is completely maxed out.
The margin is the clearest needle on the dial. But a single dollar today doesn't tell us where the company is heading tomorrow. That brings us to dial two.
Which is?
Cash flow growth versus invested capital growth. This measures motion over time, the trajectory.
So we want to see how the pipes are widening as the business scales.
Exactly. If capital balloons while cash flow stagnates, the overflow is being consumed. The growth tank is expanding rapidly, but the water level isn't rising.
Makes sense. Okay, what's the third dial?
Dial three looks at the tell. It compares maintenance CapEx versus growth CapEx.
Wait, hold on. I need to stop you there because this is where I always get tripped up.
Okay, sure.
If I pull up a standard cash flow statement right now, I don't see maintenance or growth separated out nicely. I just see one massive bleeding negative number labeled capital expenditures or CapEx.
Right. They lump it all together.
Yeah. It's a total black box. If the accountants just lump it all together, why does the distinction even matter?
It's a brilliant question. It matters immensely because maintenance CapEx just keeps the existing toll alive.
Yeah.
It's fixing the broken espresso machine.
Right.
Growth CapEx is buying expansion dollar by dollar. It's building the new store.
Okay.
They tell completely opposite stories about the health of the business.
Because one is a struggle for survival and the other is a deliberate choice.
Yes. The essay actually brings up Warren Buffett to hammer this home. When Buffett defines what he calls owner earnings, the true cash tash a business generates, he subtracts maintenance CapEx, but he does not subtract growth CapEx.
Wait,
yeah, because growth CapEx is discretionary.
Oh, wow. That is a massive distinction. So we have to actually dig in and figure out if they are spending money to run on a treadmill or spending money to sprint ahead.
And that deliberate choice to sprint ahead is what leads us to dial 4, ROIC versus cost of capital, the threshold.
Which brings us full circle right back to the Mabuse quote from the intro.
Exactly. It's the ultimate test of whether reinvestment creates or destroys value with every single cycle.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because you mentioned Aswath Damodaran's statistic in the text earlier.
Yeah, the 70%.
Right. For the last decade, 60 to 70% of companies globally have earned less than their cost of capital. Most growth is actively destroying value.
It's a staggering reality check.
Okay, so if I'm the listener, I'm thinking, I've got this figured out. I just boot up a stock screener. I look for a high ROIC today, and boom, I found a great business, right?
I would strongly warn against that. The source introduces what they call the trap of the single snapshot. Yeah, a single year's numbers can lie in two totally different directions.
How does a hard math number lie?
Well, first, it can flatter a doomed business. Say a company invents a trendy gadget, like a fidget spinner. Massive ROIC right now.
Right.
But competition will quickly flood the market and drive that return right down to the cost of capital. The snapshot showed overflow, but reality holds a drain.
But wait, if a company has a terrible ROIC right now, it's definitely a zone 3 depletion nightmare, right?
Not always. And this is Damodaran's other warning. A snapshot can also condemn a magnificent business. Think about young compounders.
Like early Amazon.
Exactly. Yeah. Building massive networks. They might show returns below their cost of capital simply because they are early in their life. The capital is deployed, but the cash flow just hasn't arrived yet.
Huh. So the dial is a trajectory, not a photograph. How do we know if a high ROIC will actually last?
To know that, you have to look for the barrier, the economic moat.
The moat, the castle wall protecting the cash flow.
Right. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the ratios place the needle, but the structural barrier, the competitive advantage, dictates whether it will stay there.
So a wide free cash flow margin without a moat is just a mirage.
Exactly.
So bringing this all together, the averaging up philosophy is essentially a clear two-step discipline for your mental toolkit.
Right.
Step one, read the flow. Look at the ratios, the FCF, capital growth, CapEx breakdown, ROIC versus cost of capital to measure what the business is today.
And then step two, read the barrier. Interrogate the economic moat to figure out what the business is becoming. Is the overflow protected?
It's so clear when you lay it out. Why do investors fail to do this?
Because most investors stop at step one. They're seduced by a single year's number, and they get caught out when a mirage evaporates, or they miss out when a dismissed young compounder suddenly explodes into overflow.
You have to hold the number and the moat in the same gaze.
You have to.
You know, it's really an empowering framework. It shifts you from relying on, like, talking heads on TV to actually understanding the mechanics of a business.
It fundamentally changes how you see things.
Well, we have covered a massive amount of ground today. We moved from the abstract reservoirs of tolls and growth straight through those hard financial metrics and finally to the protective power of the moat.
It's a lot, but it's essential.
It is. But I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. We've talked about these principles in terms of public companies and stock markets, but think about your own career or small business you run.
Oh, that's interesting.
Are your daily efforts, your invested capital of time and energy, generating an overflow that builds your future? Or are you stuck in maintenance CapEx just to keep your head above water?
That's a great question.
What is your personal economic moat? Definitely something to explore on your own.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the averaging up source material. Remember, again, this was educational analysis, not investment advice. Keep seeking out those structural choke points, and we'll see you next time.